Before we get into today's episode, I want to share a quick note. This episode is part of a series I'm calling The Episodes That Built My Practice. What started as simple conversations, really coffee chats, with professionals across the industry turned into something much more impactful than I ever expected. These are the people taking time out of their day to share their stories, their experiences, and how they navigated their careers. And over time, those conversations started to shape how I think. They helped me build confidence, work through imposter syndrome, and better understand what it really takes to grow in this profession, and eventually to start my own practice. So I'm bringing back the episodes that had the biggest impact on me, 25 episodes, because sometimes one conversation can change how you see your entire career path. And I hope these do the same for you. I hope you enjoy listening to the 25 episodes that really shaped and built my career. And in the show notes below, I'm going to start off the show notes with the impactful lesson I learned from this individual. So don't forget to check out the show notes to see what the lesson was before you listen to this story. Hello, and welcome to Mentor Dino. I'm your host, Caitlin Rossier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. I firmly believe that architecture, engineering, and construction professionals can achieve true success by embracing human skills as their guiding principle. So each week, I interview amazing professionals in and around the AEC industry as a way to share stories, inspiration, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, we'd love to have you join our community. So if you like this episode, please do me a favor and hit subscribe, like, or leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own career journey. So let's dive in. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I would like to welcome Puffya Joshi, a principal architect at Salka Studio in Phoenix, Arizona. Thank you so much, Puffya, for taking the time to speak with me today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I always start out with my loaded question. And if you mind introducing yourself and letting my listeners know a little bit about your experience and journey so far in your career in education.
Yeah. So as Caitlin said, my name is Puffya Joshi. I am a licensed architect here in Arizona and as well as in Texas. I am a founder and principal at Salka Studio, which is an architecture firm focusing on residential architecture that is sustainable and energy efficient, just focusing on creating houses that are just comfortable, durable, and overall resilient. I'm from India. I did my bachelor's in architecture from there. I worked there for a couple of years. And I actually worked at two different firms. And I like talking about that because the first firm that I worked for was a small firm. And that gave me a broader perspective into basically a life cycle of a project. And I learned a lot there. And the second firm, then I transitioned into a huge firm, which was in that office, there were 100 people. So very quickly, you're working with so many people, you learn teamwork, but also now we are shifted to construction documents, project and construction details. So those 2 years gave me a very well-rounded look or taste of practicing architecture in India. Once I did that, I felt like I needed to explore or experience architecture in or education in the U.S. So that's when I started looking at some programs. I was aware of Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Some of my relatives went there. So I was looking at their website and I saw this program, GeoFutures. And I absolutely loved the program. It was very futuristic, and that really motivated me because I wanted to do something that was different from what I was doing, like the technical stuff. I wanted to do something that the futuristic, just to broaden my horizon. I absolutely loved it. So I did my master's in architecture, came to the U.S. I got a 50% scholarship, so that helped. And once I graduated, the next step for me was to start find a job. I remember one of my professors told me to stay in research, and I thought to myself, well, yeah, but I need to get a job because I have to get a work visa. I have to pay the student loan. So I moved on to job. I worked there for a bit. Wonderful experience. It was after that I took a little bit of a break, which I don't like to call it a setback because it was a break that happened because of the work visa, which I'm sure a lot of listeners who are immigrants in the U.S., they would understand like how things can get tricky with that. So I took a little break, and I embraced that because that was the time when I really had that talk, like, what do I want to do with my career? And I just realized that I love architecture, and I do want to work for myself. So that was the realization I got in that time that I took my break. And that's when I started working on my licensure. I got my license and I started my firm. And yeah, now I am leading Salka Studio and working on the projects that I feel really passionate about.
No, that's fantastic. It's fantastic. I have so many questions already. So as someone who's not an immigrant, I tend to always have questions on what it's like for you since you were a licensed professional out in India and came over to the States. I've learned every country is a little bit different of a process in terms of coming over. So what was that process coming over from India? Was there anything you would recommend or advice for others in India looking to come over to the States when they have that work experience already?
Yeah. So it depends. Like, if you have had work experience and you're looking to come here for work visa, just for work, basically, mm-hmm. You need a work visa. And that can be more tricky because when you're looking for a job, you're not just looking for a job. You're also looking for that sponsorship. And it's not always that easy. Mm-hmm. For me, I came here for education first. So it was easier for me to transition. Still not that easy because, it was hard for me to find a job because, like I said, I was looking for sponsorship. So if you are coming here for your studies, for your master's or bachelor's, the first thing I will say is that just relax, take a deep breath, because it is a very stressful journey. And so just take care of yourself. Like, that's the first thing, because it was very stressful for me. The second thing, the process is very different for a student visa and a work visa, but just make sure you're very thorough when you're going for that visa interview, which is the dreaded thing. At least it was for me. And what does help is if you already have work experience, what helps is if you get your license in India, your architecture license in India. It's a lot easier in India to get the license, but that can help immensely once you're in US and you're applying for licensure in the US. If you don't have work experience in India and you're looking to move here for education, then what helped me in getting job here, what really helped me do well in job here, was to have that work experience in India. So if you have just graduated in India, think about maybe working there for a few years and then move here, because then you have that technical knowledge, you have that edge. Because like I said, I think that applying for job here with that caveat of you need a work sponsorship can give you a slight disadvantage. But H-1B stuff is tricky, especially because you have to actually win a lottery. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that till probably like 6 or 8 months ago. That's like the not fun thing I am learning from all these conversations is about the process and the struggles I've learned. There's timing with things. You've got to, like, it's all very regimented in terms of the process, and mess up one step, trip once, and it can set you back years.
Exactly. And so there's one thing to get a company to sponsor you. Then there's that second stage, which is you actually winning a lottery. And lawyers take care of most of the stuff for the sponsorship. But for student visa, I did everything from preparing the paperwork. Like, you know, it's a lot of work. So, just make sure you're thorough with that. Don't stress about it, but just make sure everything is in place when you go for that interview, when you're applying for these paperworks, and get help, like get those lawyers and see if your company can sponsor you. Talk to them, explain it to them, communicate that you do need that help.
Do you find, I've never worked in India, so is there a big difference between being an architect in India versus the United States? Do you find like the day to day very similar or very different, like skipping building codes and, you know, the more not fun stuff, but like for what we do, how does that compare?
I would say for me, the work culture here in US, for me, it was very different. For example, like I remember the first week of my job, I was sitting at my desk. It was 6:30 p.m. And I was working, and my boss walked in and he was like, "What are you doing here?" It's like, "I'm not paying you for that extra work you're doing." I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right. Like, what am I doing here?" Because in India, I don't know, at least I tend to overwork, and there is a little bit of, the culture is, I felt, was more relaxed in the US, at least the companies that I work for. So even just like, you know, hanging out with your colleagues and bosses as well, like, you know, I adapted to that pretty quickly, but to have fun and, more fun, I guess. I guess, like, you know, every office is different, but at least the one that I worked for, it was more casual.
Yeah, which was a surprise to me. Because you never know the culture shock, too. Like, I mean, I ask the question, think you're going to say something about documents, but I try to keep my questions open-ended so I can learn. And so I didn't think of the culture side and if you guys are heads down grind work more all day versus here. It's like, we put our heads down and get stuff done, but we also talk and then, you know, have a little bit of fun in the office.
Yeah, I mean, you have fun in India, an office in India as well, but it's just like laid back is the word that I like to use. But coming back to the technical side of it, for me, in India, a lot of it is RCC, like reinforced concrete construction, and here it's so much wood frame construction. So when I started working here, that was a learning curve for me to move. I still remember making silly mistakes in the drawings because I was still in the mindset of RCC construction. Mm-hmm. So that was for me definitely, I have to very quickly adapt to it, because when I did my master's, because it was a futuristic research-based program, nobody talked about, like, you know, wood frame construction. No. So the first day of my job, and I'm like, what is this stuff? So what I do recommend to students who are thinking about coming here for work is, if in future you think you are going to pursue licensure, just start going through the content of AREs. Register yourself on NCARB, get some resource from them, but also just look at some books. I learned so much while I was studying for my AREs, especially those things that were a gap in construction in India or just the industry in India and in the US.
Yeah, that's what I usually even recommend for any young professional. It's hey, well, I recommend taking the exams as early as possible because it's your job's only going to get more stressful and you're going to have more ownership and leadership roles. That's just going to get harder. But it'll also help with that learning curve because sometimes architecture programs, even the states, don't teach you all of those technical things to tie it all together. They're so segmented that they don't communicate as well together. So it's learn that. So then you start recognizing things when people say it in the office. You're like, oh, I read that like 2 weeks ago. So I actually know what you're talking about.
Yeah. AR is definitely, they have just put that all so well, dividing them into various phases of the project. So yeah, absolutely agree with you.
Yeah. And then I wanted to jump into you stepping back and taking a break for a little bit. So why did you step back and take a break? And was there any stress with the visa side? Because I know, you know, there are times you have to have a job and standing and you only get so much time period. So how was kind of why to step back and take a break? And then that lens of having that visa too.
Yes. Oh, so architecture was not part of STEM when I graduated. So the reason why I mentioned that is because if architecture was under STEM, I would have had 2.5 years to, I think that's what the time frame is, to apply for my visa. Or that's the time I have to work here on student visa. But at that time, you only had 1 year because, like I said, architecture was not part of STEM. So I just had one shot at getting my H-1B. So you remember I mentioned the lottery?
Yeah.
I didn't win the lottery. So I didn't have work visa. So I had just work visa for a year and I could not work in the U.S. So that's when I took that break. I married my boyfriend and I got visa through him. He won his lottery, so he had the visa. So now when you're on spouse visa, you cannot work. You can be in the United States, but you cannot work. So that was the time that I took that break. I thought about maybe going back to research. I was interested. I'm still very interested in education. When I was in Austin, I was teaching at the Art Institute. I love doing that. That's part of the reason I have my own firm because I want to make sure that I do have time for that as well. So I looked into that option. I went back to India for a while as well. But yeah, when it was time for me to, when I could start working again, I just realized, no, I love practicing architecture. I definitely want to continue doing that. And that also led me to starting my own firm. But yeah, yeah, that's the story of me taking a break. I begged a lot during that time.
But it also shows that perseverance because it is a lottery. That means some people get it and some people don't. And not letting that no at first hold you back from getting back to practice, you know, it created a different, unique path for you to get there.
Definitely. And
you got that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Persistence is, and this, the love for architecture. I spoke to a student, she was thinking about architecture and I told her just, you know, see what motivates you, what part of architecture, because we are all like, we all are so unique. Like we are so like, I don't know. Perfectionist, and we love to work hard. We need to have the love for architecture. We are in architecture because we love it. That's what I say. So if you are kind of not sure, if you think that you might not love architecture in the long run, think about it, because there is a lot of persistence and motivation that is required to have that longevity in architecture.
Yeah, 100%. So moving on to starting your own firm. So once you're able to work again, what was that deciding factor to, okay, I'm just going all in on myself?
I think, to be very honest, one of the, see, I wanted to practice architecture. I wanted to do something for the environment. That was something that I felt from the very beginning. Like, I wanted to do energy efficient homes. But I think one of the other main reason was to have the flexibility mm-hmm. and to avoid burnout. Because like I mentioned, like I brought that overworking nature with me from India. So even if I was at a firm where there is not a lot of workload, I would still overwork. And so for me, having that flexibility was a chance for me to not do that. And to be very honest, I still do it. But at least now I have the control that when I want, I can manage that work-life balance and avoid burnout, mm-hmm. which is very real, which can happen a lot, especially for people like me who are not very good at saying no. So yeah, flexibility, avoiding burnout. Also, I love being involved in all stages of project. So when I was working, if I'm doing construction documents, I'm doing construction documents, and I could get pigeonholed, and that I felt like, okay, if I have my own firm, I love talking to clients. I love educating them. I even love doing proposals. Contracts, not so much, but I love that whole journey and then moving to designs and construction document, construction administration. I love doing all phases. So having my own firm means I can do that. So that was another motivation. Having flexibility from the point of view that I can pursue education, I still love that. At some point, I want to do that again. Teaching, advocating for the profession, for women in architecture, for the environment, and just, mentoring. Like, I want to be able to do all those things. I'm not saying that if you are working a full-time job, you can't do that. You can still do that. I knew that for me, it would be just too much. So I would burn myself out. Those are a few reasons for having my own firm.
Yeah. And there's so many different ways that people can get burned out. Sometimes it's not from the firm itself. I know I had a professional that got burned out based on all of his work in different organizations and different mm-hmm. roles that they were holding. And they actually needed to cut back and say, nope, all right, like I still have my job and I got to do this. Or finding the firm, they now teach as well. And that company lets him flex his hours. So then, you know, he's got some longer days whenever he's not teaching, but he's perfectly fine to cut out early to go teach studio or whatever classes he's doing that semester. So
it takes a lot of practice, I believe. And like I said, it takes, like, you need to know how to say no, when to cut back, because we do want to do it all. Like, we mm-hmm. want to mentor, we want to advocate, we want to be involved in these organizations. But so, it takes a lot of self-control, I feel, and balance to make sure that you're not burning yourself out and doing things that you still love to do.
Yeah. And I know it is always hard to come up with a business name. I know when I came up with Mentor Dino, I kind of had more of an understanding of firms using their own names or initials when coming up with their firm name, because so many names are already taken. So, but yours is not your name. So where did Salka come from?
Yeah. So I love that question because I absolutely love the answer. In 2020, when I started my firm and I was just doing all the paperwork, right before that, end of 2019 is when me and my husband, we took a trip to Peru. Machu Picchu was one of our bucket lists. And I came across this ancient language from Peru called Quechua, which is actually going extinct now. I saw some women singing in Quechua and I started researching it a little bit more. And I found out that Salka in Quechua means wild, untamed, untouched land, environment, nature in broader sense. And I absolutely love that, like, untouched environment. So Salka means untouched environment, nature in this old Peruvian language. And I was telling you earlier, the spelling is S-A-L-L-Q-A. That's the actual Quechua name. But I wanted to add an A instead of a Q. So I added that A. So now I'm having this pronunciation issues with the name because people are calling it Salka, which it, like I said, the A is silent. It's actually Salka. So I'll have to think something about that. But yeah,
just let it go. I know we were joking earlier. I get Mentor Dino, Mentor Dino, and I'm like, well, I don't want the I to be a Y. Yeah. Like, so I just let it go.
So that's the story.
No, and that's awesome. Any recommendations down in Machu Picchu? Because I know that's on my bucket list, but getting down there is
Have to talk off the camera and talk about that. There is so much to do. Peru has so many different landscapes, from Machu Picchu to deserts to islands. And it's amazing.
Yeah, on the list. I'm going to keep you in my contacts as Peru exclamation point. And I'll bug you. But getting back to your firm, I know your firm focuses on design on health and wellness and weaving that through your projects. And that really aligns with the name of the company now as well. So what are some strategies you're doing in your projects? And I guess teaching, because with residential, it's oftentimes not people who are used to building and constructing things. So I don't know if there's other ways you help teach that as well.
Yeah. So for Salka, like something when I was in college, just the concept of organic architecture was very, I was fascinated by that. And it always dawned on me that, well, it's about the people who are in that space. They need to feel comfortable. For example, like for Salka, it's at the core, the wellness and health of the people living in the house is at the core of it. For example, I make sure the spaces are bright. There is a lot of natural light coming in. But then viewing it from the energy efficiency perspective, like making sure that, well, the light is coming in, but heating up the space and making the house inefficient. So high performance windows, overhangs, just all that basic stuff, making sure that is integrated into the project. And merging that with the fierce perspective, passive house perspective, is making sure the mechanical ventilation is there, bringing in fresh air, filtered fresh air. What kind of insulation are you using? Using healthy insulation and making sure there is no mold or mildew in the walls. So the walls are designed that way. So things like that. Biophilia, I make sure biophilia is integrated into the project. And when I was teaching, a lot of my students would get really excited about the concept of biophilia because it relates to, more importantly, your mental health. Like, it calms you down. Having indoor plants, having views that are looking out, integrating the outdoor and the interior spaces. So combining all of that, so making sure the health and wellness is integrated in the space, but also we are making sure that house is still energy efficient. Like I said, there are no huge windows which are heating up the space, things like that. When I was teaching residential architecture, especially, I would take a whole week in which I would encourage students to think about that one thing. How would they make that space feel more, design that space in a way that the occupants would feel calmer? What would be that element that you would put into that space? So that was a huge success. And everybody felt very motivated about that as well, because it's not just about making the space look pretty, but also the occupants, making them feel comfortable, mentally, physically. So yeah, that is something that I make sure I integrate in all my designs. Even if the house is not necessarily a passive building project, I do talk to my clients, educate them, even if they're not going for certification, making sure that they include certain aspects of these things into their designs. So yeah.
Yeah. And I like how you gave the students a emotion to design around, because everything was, and when I was in school, it wasn't really emotions. It was just go find your concept and go. And I was all about the form and not so much about the occupants as much. And that's my favorite part of architecture is the people we get to talk to, learn what they do and how to make a space that they can do their best, be their best selves. So I like that. If I ever teach studio, maybe I'll do that. And they've got to pick an emotion out of a hat or something and design around that. And I know you are also president of FIAS Alliance's Southwest chapter. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing over there?
Yeah. So this is the first year of FIAS Alliance's Southwest chapter. I'm very excited about this role. Right now, we are doing the foundation work for the chapter, building the network, building the website, basically bringing all the people together. The concept of the FIAS Alliance is to just reach out to these people, not just architects or builders who might be interested in passive house, but also owners or clients who think they might be interested in having a house that is FIAS certified. So networking is at the core of the chapter. Once we have done the foundation stuff, we are going to move on to the good stuff, which is planning meetups and doing conferences, seminars. In fact, we are planning to have a conference for the chapter where people from like the builders, the vendors, architect, they will all come together, talk about their projects, talk about what's the latest, how did they implement certain standards and their success stories. They will share that. So we are very excited about that. But yeah, right now doing all the foundation stuff, creating my Instagram page for the chapter. And yeah, we have our the vice president is from New Mexico. And so Southwest is New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. So yeah, we are very excited about this bunch of people.
Yeah, I was going to ask what states are in it. So is there an alliance for each region and they've all started kicking off?
So it's divided into region, but once state has enough people, it will get broken down into states. So like New York and Massachusetts, they have their own state alliance. Austin, in fact, Texas has an Austin alliance. It has a Houston alliance. But in Southwest right now, four of these states are merged together. But once we have enough people and we have built a big community, it might get divided into state alliances.
Mm-hmm. I'm never surprised when Texas has multiple things. I've learned a lot on what goes on in Texas, but it's just like, okay, go ahead and do whatever you want. And I know you're also Passive House certified. So what's that process if anybody's looking for their own certification?
Yeah. For me, when I started my firm, I think I was looking for a certification, something to just give me a little bit more in-depth knowledge of what I wanted to do. So I was looking at certification and I started reading about the FIAS Passive House Institute of US and the certification CPHC, which is Certified Passive House Consultant. And I was so impressed because this certification, it just felt so logical. because it is climate-based. That's the first thing I really liked about it. It's climate-based. It is not necessarily going to be too expensive. It's affordable. That means accessible to people who don't have that kind of budget. Mm-hmm. And it is just standards. Yes, you can go for certification, but even if you don't go for certification, if you are implementing only certain standards, it still makes the house a little bit more comfortable and durable and just comfortable overall, right? So the process for that is there are FIAs have amazing trainers. So you will take some classes, you will get some training. And the first thing that you have to do is pass a multiple choice question. Once you have done that, you move on into the design exam, which is you have to create a passive house. It is a take home exam. So you can take your time with it. And then once you have done that design exam and you pass it, and now you're certified, you're a CPHC. So it's not just architects, builders, vendors, even if you're just interested in passive houses and you have some kind of background in architecture, you can still pursue CPHC. I think that was one of the best decisions I took to pursue this certification. Yeah, really good stuff. Very logical, very, very simple and efficient concept that they have to make spaces energy efficient, but also just healthy to be in. Like, for example, a lot of people who have allergies have had really good time and success. There are so many success stories for them because the outdoor air is properly filtered before it comes in. So it's an airtight building. That's what a FIAS building is. So a lot of people who have really bad allergies said that they didn't suffer inside the house because the house is such an airtight space.
And
I definitely recommend it.
I know I am not passive house certified. But I've always liked that process and what they teach from those I know that have gotten their passive house certification more than when they were just like when I went to school, they were cramming lead down our throats and it was just that next thing. And I'm like, it's just multiple choice. And then it's just you checking off boxes. And sometimes that checkbox doesn't make sense for what's going on, but it doesn't teach you the technological systems and building envelope that passive house does, but it also gives that human side too. So and not to say I hate anybody with lead, but I don't have my lead either and I will not go for it because I find it too much of a checkbox.
When I was introducing myself during the training, the trainer asked me, okay, why CPHC? I was like, I wanted to get a certification in this field and I thought about LEED, but then I chose CPHC and she was like, well, you made the right decision. So, but no hate on LEED and it's really, helpful and a really good certification as well. And the CPHC, like you said, it's so building science focused. Mm-hmm. And we also did energy modeling, goofy passive software, and really got into the details and depth of it. Like you're not an architect or builder, something interested in, it's something really interesting to, even if you're a client. I know there's a owner who hired an architect and then the owner got certified because he was so interested in just learning about how the house is getting constructed in a more healthy and durable manner.
Mm-hmm. And I find it's been a while since I've had a tour of a project that was passive house certified, but I feel the owners, whether they are more of a commercial owner or a residential owner, those are the tours I got from the owners with the architect. Like the owners were just so knowledgeable on all the ins and outs where I don't know, I could go to a LEED building and say, hey owner, tell me about all the systems. And they're like, I don't know, we've had to pay this money and do this. So it's that passion that the owner
it's
brings.
The passion. Absolutely. I have a client, not a client, but somebody who wanted to build, but then they couldn't build a passive house. I still am in touch with him, and he would just ask me questions. Well, I'm thinking about replacing my water heater. What do I do? Which one do I go with? And we have those conversations. So he cannot at the moment build a passive house, but he's still thinking about how to make his current residence into a more efficient one. And we keep having that conversation. So I see the passion, and it's something that they do get it. They understand it because it's, mm-hmm. it is technical, but it can be very simple as well. Very easy to understand. So I agree with that. The owners have that passion, and that's what even at PS Alliance, what we are doing is just to further this whole passive building movement. You know, it's just people are getting interested in it. It's still not as mainstream, but the interest that people are having in it, it's just going up. So just to make sure that anybody who has any question, we are here to answer them and just educate them on that.
Yeah. And as inflation goes up and everything gets more expensive, it's, hey, if you're building, why are you buying the cookie cutter homes that they won't even tell you what they're putting into the project? You just get to pick the cabinets. It's like, no, let's build an actual house that is airtight, efficient for you. If you're spending the money anyway on a house, it's not like it costs double to make it passive certified. It's a pretty simple process. It's just the right selection of materials, where they go, and making sure it's built right.
Especially in places like Arizona, where you have extreme heat. Also in Texas with, you know, Snowmageddon, like a few years ago, nobody was expecting to people were out of heat for a very long time. So,
and it can be done anywhere. It's just little tweaks on the design. Do you have any advice for anybody looking to start their own firm?
Start their own firm. I would say just persistence and motivation. Make sure that, every day there will be days where you are swamped. There will be days when you'll have more time. Just stay motivated. How would you stay motivated every day? If you really love what you are doing, that's one reason why you will stay motivated. So, which area inspires you the most? Like, what part of architecture is most fun for you? So, for some, it can be landscape architecture, it can be interior design, it can be just construction management, it can be project management. So you don't have to just stick with architecture. Like, think about it before you start your firm. Think about it. What is that aspect or part of architecture? What is your niche that will keep you motivated every day, even the days that are good or days that are bad? So there are both pros and cons of having firms. So be very sure about it. What other advice would I have for somebody? I don't know.
So
this is the part that you might have to cut out, but let me think about it. Actually, I didn't think about this. I have advice for students pursuing architecture or something, but somebody who wants to have their own firm, I think you really need to be sure that this is something that you really want. Like, what are your reasons for doing this? But I've said, flexibility was one of the reasons for me. And then I was talking to one person, and she said that, you did not want to work 9 to 5. So you chose to have your own business, but now you work 24/7. And it's really true. Mm-hmm. You think about flexibility, but there have been days when I wake up, I'm thinking about work. I'm going to bed, I'm thinking about work. So it just goes like that. So it's very rewarding for all the reasons I've mentioned before. But it can be, you know, tricky as well. So just make sure that you're really motivated and you're sure about what you're doing and you're passionate about what you are doing, because that will help you stay persistent in that.
Yeah.
I think I really did a bad job answering that question.
No, you're fine. Because everybody has their own advice along the way. I feel like I should string together all the different advice from the entrepreneurs I talk to.
Yeah. But I think the other also, like, just networking, you know, that is something that has helped me a lot. Being involved in various organizations, whether it's NCARP, AIA, NOMA, you have such amazing people in these organizations, and they are there to help you. They even just listening their stories just inspire you so much, advocating for the organization. So that definitely helped me. And I think about people who are introvert, because I kind of think of myself as an introvert at times, and networking can be a little painful. But once I just started just listening to people's story and what their experience have been, I think I really started enjoying that. And right now I do that. I love talking to people. That's why I was telling you earlier, I love what you're doing here with Mentor Dino. Listening to people's stories, I got motivated listening to some of these podcasts. So yeah, like, you know, networking really important, and having your own firm. You don't have to do it alone. There are people out there who have had the same journey. You can learn so much from them. They can learn from you. So yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have to do it alone. Like you have your own firm, but the architecture community, especially when I talk to the entrepreneurs, they're so much willing to help others and give advice or help each other out with workload even. And if somebody's slow and another friend of theirs is really busy, they can pick up and help each other out. So then it helps both organizations. So there's a big network. You don't have to feel like you're out there on your own.
No, absolutely not.
And I always like wrapping up my podcast with this final question. And it's, what advice do you have for young professionals just starting their career?
Yeah. So for them, I would say just make sure that you stay motivated, find something that you have fun with every day. Like, architecture is fun. If you think that you're not having fun doing what you are doing, it's time for you to think about it. There will be setbacks, and they don't necessarily have to be bad things. They can be good things, because for me, when I had that setback, it allowed me time to really think about what I wanted to do. And that helped me propel my career in that direction and where I wanted it to be. So, and don't compare yourself with anyone, where your journey is, you say that everybody have their unique journey. You can be somewhere. So don't compare yourself. Believe in yourself, believe in your journey. Just know where you want to be. What do you really want? What is that one thing? I keep saying that, but what is that one thing that you think would constantly motivate you? Because if you're constantly motivated, you will be persistent. Having fun, like, every day. Now, you cannot have fun every day. Like, there will be days where you're not having fun, and those days you might need to grab an extra cup of coffee or something like that. What I do is I go to a cafe to work or something like that. But there will be days like that. But most of your days should be fun. You should wake up feeling really excited about the work that you are doing. I would suggest networking, like I said, being engaged with these net organizations, and talking to people that can be really helpful. So that is one of my advice to them as well.
No, that's all fantastic advice. I know I wish I was networking more when I was younger.
I believe the same thing. I wish I was networking more.
And I'm actually more introverted than extroverted. I just know when to turn on the extroverted side, but it's like, when you go to a conference and you have to be on, I like to say, for that long, then I crash hard at the end. Like, absolutely. I need to sleep all day.
I agree with that. I totally understand you. So exactly, like for me, it was such a scary thing to just go out there and network. But once you start doing it, once you, you know, just get past that, it can be fun and you learn a lot. So absolutely recommend going to these conferences, talking to people and learning from their stories.
Yeah. And if anybody has any questions for you, wants to reach out, or they're out in Phoenix and want to grab a coffee, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Salka Studio. I can, you can reach me via my website or my email, which I can give you and you can put on the link or something. Or my email is my name, Bhavya, Bhawya, at Salka Studio, which is Sallaka Studio.com. I would love to talk to you. Yeah, I mean, especially people who are thinking about making that switch from India to US, if you have any question, I'm always happy to answer.
Yep, and I will leave all the links and tags in the show notes to make it really easy to find you. But I wanted to thank you again so much, Bhavya, for taking the time to speak with me today.
It was my pleasure. No, I'm happy to be here. That was really fun for me.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Learn some advice to take with you and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.